Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
If you want to listen to this episode or any of our episodes ad-free, you can do that now. Head on over to Patreon. Click on the ad-free level. You get all of our bonus shows that you've been hearing so much about. Plus, every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you can listen to this episode or any of our other episodes at the same time, ad-free, over on Patreon. Hey everyone, this is David. Welcome back behind the velvet rope. Let's just get right into it today because we are joined by the one, the only, Mr. Eric Roberts.
How are we, pal?
How are you? What is going on? Tell me what you're up to today.
Today's a day off for me, which are rare. I'm at home. I slept till 9 a.m. this morning, which I never do, and I got up, had a big breakfast, watched some old football games that I've had TiVo'd that I haven't had time to watch, and just stuff like that, just boring catch up stuff that I like doing.
Listen, I need a boring catch up day, so I am so jealous of you. The last catch-up day I had, I just watched you and my friend Chris Baker's The Estate.
So. That was good, a fun one.
Good movie, right?
Thank you. That was a fun one to make.
It was a very good. So I'm like, it was a great movie. So listen, when you look back at 1977, when you got your start on Another World, almost five decades ago, Does that seem like, do you have vivid memories of that? Or does that just seem like, who was that guy?
I do. It's very specific because I was bad on the soap opera in 1977, and then I was bad again in like 1999. Whenever Paul Rouse called me to come back, I'm just bad on soaps because of the technique in acting, the studying, getting ready to perform. It's a soap opera technique. I'm not good at it. I'm not good that way. I'm not a good actor in that method of getting ready to do it. I'm just not good at it. And I never was, and I never got good at it. I think I'm a fine actor, but not on soaps. Not on soaps, dude.
How are soaps different? Is it just like the speed of it or just the...
Well, you can call it the speed of it, but it's the lack of time to just wallow in it privately. So how am I going to play this? You don't have that time. You do not have that time. It has to all be instinctive. I'm not good that way. I'm an old homework guy, and I'm just not good at it. And I always felt unprepared.
Well, you're good at a lot of other things. I mean, lots of people spend their whole careers like trying to get, you know, to break through and to be nominated for certain awards. Like here you are like right out of the gate, like King of the Gypsy, Star 80, Runaway Train, you get nominated for Golden Globes and Academy Awards. Like, were you like, did you appreciate that at that time? You know what I mean? Like sometimes you work 50 years, 30 years for that. And then you're like, finally, you know, you had it early in your career. Like, did you realize what these great honors were? You did?
Oh, I did. Sure. In fact, at my first Golden Globe table, I was nominated for Best Newcomer. And there was an actor there, an English actor, and he said, he glanced at me when they announced all the nominees, and he said, I think we have a winner here, you know, indicating me. I lost to Brad Davis for for the drug movie. What was that great movie? Anyway, I lost to Brad Davis, who won Best Newcomer. And so from that moment on, I wanted to win a trophy because I lost my first time out. So, I want to win one of these. So I've always wanted to win one and never have.
Well, you've been working, you know, right after that, you were working so much in the 80s and 90s, which continue to today. But, you know, like Pope of Greenwich Village, Nobody's Fool, Raggedy Man, Coca-Cola Kid. Like, what was that time like in the 80s and then like into the early 90s? I mean, you were so busy.
Well, from 1978, when I made my first movie, King of the Gypsies, to 1993, I made maybe a movie a year. That's how we did it then. And then they take away film and they give us HD. So everything that took 3 months takes literally 3 days, not 3 weeks, 3 days. It went from 90 days to 3 days, almost literally. I'm exaggerating a little bit maybe, but not a lot. And you also didn't need experts. You didn't need good keys, good leaders of every department, because every department was easier now. It was easier. And everybody was their own like studio if they could just afford to buy a camera. They became their own studio. So what happened with me is they started calling me directly. And my wife said, "We're getting all these offers every single day. Do you want to go do this?" I said, "Yeah, let's go do this." So we went around the world 2 or 3 times together. Then she got bored doing it. She stays home now and sends me on my own. And I get a lot of offers because everybody's a studio, and I get them from all over the world.
Wow.
And I say yes a lot.
You say yes a lot, yes. Which there's nothing wrong with that. We're going to talk about that in a second. I am an avid traveler before COVID. I've been to like 55 countries. Oh, do you have a favorite place you've been when you've been working?
It depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about history and food, of course, it's Rome. If we're talking about privacy, it's Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. It all depends on what you're after, because there's all kinds of places, that are good for all kinds of things. But as far as one place being it, I don't know. I love my home.
It's so funny. I say all the time, like, Rome is one of my best food vacations. Like, if you really want to get into the food, Rome is one of my favorites. I cannot agree more.
Rome and New Orleans, pal. That's where you go for food.
That's like another one. Well, in the 80s and like some into the 90s, you know, like, look, you've been very open, you were working all the time. It was the 80s, that's when you got into drugs and, no shade or any shame there. You've been very open about it. Like, what was that like? I mean, I'm picturing, it's the 80s and, there's coke everywhere on a movie set. Like, this is where my mind goes. And look, no one says no to the actor, the star, right?
No, it was a drug society then. It was a cocaine society. Everybody from the executive producers to craft service were doing that drug on movie sets. And to the point where when you arrived on a set, they would send you to the prop truck where they have all these mirrors and all these lines out. And everybody would like come and go all day and do cocaine. I was very lucky. I can't talk when I do cocaine. I just can't speak properly. So I can't do it while I work. So I would wait until after work to partake, which would take my evening away. But anyway, those were those days. But it was insane. Everybody was doing that drug. Yes.
That's kind of what I picture. So, like, I know, you had like certain arrests and like then this car crash and, listen again, like, so what, I mean, the car crash wasn't the end for you. You kept going. So, like, I know eventually, many years later, you ended up on Celebrity Rehab with our good friend, Dr. Drew. Like, what was it that finally brought you there and said, like, this is the end?
You're acting like those things are all connected to each other. They are not. Celebrity Rehab you know, they call celebrities and, do you have a drug problem? If you do, we'd be on our show. And so they call my wife. Does Eric have a drug problem? No, he smokes a little pot. Why? Well, you know, does he want to quit? No. Well, if he does, we want him on the show. It was like that kind of thing. And then she goes, you know, I think you should promote quitting pot, because, you know, you have a daughter, you have a stepson and a stepdaughter who both, you know, partake on occasions. And you should promote stopping, because your people listen to you. So you should go on the show and do that, Eric. So I went on that show on my wife's advice to be a good guy. And I stopped smoking pot for a while, but I'm what you call a pothead.
Right. Like, you had already like stopped doing coke like way before that. Right. No, I mean, the yeah. two, right. Like the two, no, technically. Yeah. Right.
No, you don't live a long life, you know, being a cokehead.
No, you don't. No. I would agree with that. So when you went on Celebrity Rehab, you know, like, listen, we're in a different time now. Like, right, everyone's on a reality show now. But like, did you have like, you know, agents and managers and saying, Eric, wait, you're an actor, you're working, like, what are you doing?
Of course I did. They all freaked out. And they all blame my wife because I listened to her. And how can you let Eric do that? Oh my God, he's ruined. He's over. He was legitimate. Yeah, that kind of thing. And, you know, what are you going to do? You just have to grin and bear it and know that everybody's right and everybody's wrong. Get over it. It's all good. Have a good day. You know.
Well, listen, it didn't slow you down at all because you kept working. You know, you've done movies, TV. Like, do you have a preference between, I mean, like, TV has come so far, like Grey's Anatomy, you run Grey's Anatomy, which is, I still think, one of the best shows out there.
Yeah, it's a hell of a show. It's all the same now. It's all the same. It's all the same speed. It's all the same schedules. The director is not the king. So you don't have an artistic guide anymore. You just have a first AD and a time frame. Let's go, here we are, bang. And you have to do it that way, and if you don't, they will not hire you again. It's as simple as that.
Wow. Do you have a movie that, I mean, you've been in so many movies, that's like, just, you know, one or two that are just your favorite experiences that just stand out?
As you just said, I've been in so many movies, so I have so many favorites. I have King of the Gypsies, Star 80, Runaway Train, It's My Party, Paul's Case, Purgatory, Love is a Gun. Those are my seven favorites.
I love how you can just rattle those off.
Well, those have real places in my artistic heart. Yeah.
What about, do you have a movie that, you know, look, we all make mistakes, or, you know, you're part of a movie and you're like, oh, this just didn't turn out so great, or it just wasn't a great experience for you?
Well, I was actually fooled by a movie once. I made a movie that I said yes to on a whim called The Ambulance. And I thought it was a horrible movie. And it turned out to make all kinds of money and be a huge hit in France and kind of make me viable in France, this movie. And I thought it was horrible, horrible movie. But I was wrong in how it was received. It's a beloved movie. And I now look at it and I can see why. But at the time I couldn't.
Can you tell, I mean, you know, because I read a lot of things and I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, like, you see a trailer for a movie and you're like, oh, I don't know about that. But like, can you tell by reading a script? I would imagine you could at this point. Your wife.
8 times out of 10 you can. 20% of the time, you mess up. Like, I read Officer and Gentleman and it read like a soap opera. I thought, this sucks. Who can do this? What a great movie. I was wrong. So, you know, shit happens.
Shit happens. So, like, you read it, you say, I'm not interested in this, I'm going to pass. Like, you don't even audition.
Yeah, right. And no, it happens probably 30% of the time. You know, you're wrong 30% of the time. That's a lot of wrong.
Wow.
And that's why you need advice, you need help, you need people who you respect, who you can ask questions of, and they will give you real legitimate answers. And you need to surround yourself with that group. And that's a trick, especially after you're famous, because after you're famous, everybody says what you want to hear a lot, and as opposed to what you should hear.
Right.
It is what it is. And you just have to be a grown up and take care of yourself and not blame other people.
Have you ever been close to like getting a part, you know, like you were in the mix and then it went to someone else where we can say, oh, wow, that was almost Eric Roberts?
Yeah. Raising Arizona, I really wanted, and the guy got it who earned it. But I wanted that part, dude.
That was a good part.
Yeah.
What about, like, let's talk about some of your co-stars. Like, you've worked with everyone. What was it like working with Brooke Shields in King of the Gypsies? And then, again, in the Hot Flashes, let's not forget that little gem.
Yeah, we played brother and sister in 1978. And then 20 years later, we played husband and wife. Yeah, that was cool. Brooke was so cool in that first movie because, you know, Brooke had been around a lot of blocks. You know, Brooke had a lot of movie work under her belt. And I was a rookie. So I kind of took a lot of my cues off Brooke because a lot of our stuff was together. And in fact, all the car stuff was me and Brooke. I knocked a camera off a camera mount. Brooke's like, that's cool. They don't care. And I'm like, thank God. You know, I was, oh my God, I have the camera. Oh my God. But don't worry about it. No big deal. You know, they have insurance. You know, Brooke was cool. I'm like, oh, thank God Brooke is with me, you know. But Brooke was just neat. Brooke was just neat. Brooke was a little girl who was like a grown-up. She was cool. Yeah, she was fun to hang out with. And her mom was only slightly out of control. And so it was all kind of colorful and fun, you know.
She just slightly out of control. That's good, right?
Yeah.
What about working with Daryl Hannah in the Pope of Greenwich Village?
Well, I've always loved Daryl. Although Daryl really, her scenes with Mickey, really. I mean, you know, I'm in a couple of small scenes with her. But no, you know, Daryl and I are buddies, but we never really worked together. We've been in the same movies several times, but we don't really ever have any real scenes together. But I love Daryl.
What about the great final analysis with Kim Basinger and you?
Well, Kim's one of the coolest chicks on 2 feet. She's just cool, man. And she's smart. She's funny. She's drop dead perfectly beautiful. And she's kind. And the scene I had with her in Final Analysis where I'm buck naked and I'm in there shaving. And we had that conversation in the mirror. Then I turn around and tell her to do it. And she hits her knees and cut out. We cut out. And it's like, you know, Kim Basinger. Wow, that's kind of cool. I don't want to sound tasteless, but you know, when you're in a movie with maybe one of the three most beautiful women to ever be in cinema, period, and you get to act hard R with her. It's cool, dude. It's a lot of fun.
So who are the other two besides Kim Basinger that are the most beautiful women to be in cinema?
Well, Elizabeth Taylor. And I'll let everybody have their own choice, that third one.
For the third. And then finally with Sharon Stone in The Specialist, which was
Sharon's a cool chick, man. Sharon was the coolest. In fact, Sharon is so cool, and that was such a cool movie, they had to change it because Sharon's character slept with all of us. And when they watched the rough cut, they said, you know what? She sleeps with all those men. She sleeps with everybody. We got it. Somebody has to not sleep with her. And so they cut my scene out. We had a great love scene, dude. But they cut it out because she effed everybody, so they had to cut somebody out. It unfortunately had to be me because I was the bad guy.
Well, you've played a bunch of bad guys, and even when you're a good guy, you have this ability to, like, I mean, scare people. Like, you have scenes where you're like, this guy is a scary guy.
You know, I heard that a lot in growing up in cinema. I heard that a lot. And I always took it as a grain of salt up until I started noticing when women see me in New York City or in Detroit where they have sidewalks, you know, wherever there's a major city with sidewalks, not Los Angeles, but where you'll see a woman 30 yards away recognize you and cross the street to avoid you. And that put it in perspective for me. Wow, they really think I am this guy that I act like that I'm not. But they'll cross the street to not have to pass me. And that is the ultimate insult and the ultimate compliment, all in the same breath. Yeah.
Wow. When did you realize that? Like, was it after a certain film or you just realized?
Yeah, it was after Star 80. After, because.
Oh, wow.
Star 80 changed how everybody dealt with me, both personally and professionally. It changed everything. How everybody thought I was a different guy. Everybody thought I was something I wasn't.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, that's kind of the best compliment possible. I mean, I guess it's a huge insult too, like you said.
It's also a hindrance. It's also a pain in the ass. It's in your way. It's like, no, guys, I'm not that. Come on, drop that shit. Let's do this, you know? Yeah.
Wow. Well, you were also in the great Less Than Perfect ABC TV comedy, which I loved. Do you like doing like situational comedies like that?
I love that show, and I would have loved my experience on that show more, except I have issues with the depression, and I started psychotropic drugs when I was on that show, you know, Prozac and Buspar and, you know, those things. And I was on a whole recipe of psychotropics, and I felt I wasn't myself. And I had no comedic timing, and it got in my way. And I feel I was not very good on that show because of that. But I didn't realize it until after I was through that experience, realized, you know what it was? Why I had such a bad time personally on that show was because of psychotropics. My God, that's when I was on psychotropics. And so that experience is not altogether positive for me. But it's nobody's fault but my own and my doctors and my shrinks.
Wow. So like you literally like look back. Now, mind you, I can't tell. I bet you the average person. I mean, I thought you were great in that show. But
thank you, dude.
And I'm not just saying that. So like you really like you could look back at, you know, you're such a good actor. You could like look back at your performance, watch that show and say, wow, I could see the psychotropics and I could see that. Yeah. I just was. Wow.
Yeah.
And you could see that you were off to you. To an expert.
My comedic timing was basically non-existent because of psychotropics.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not good for comics, in my opinion.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think you need to be a really trained. Are you sure you're not just too hard on yourself, Eric?
No, I'm one of my three biggest fans, dude.
I was gonna say. Is there something, and I mean, you've done so much in this business. Is there a part of this business that like you haven't done that you still want to do?
Yeah, there's a part I want to play desperately, and I can only play him for the next about 10 years. And then I'm going to be too old or I'm going to be too weak. And that's, I want to play Nureyev. I almost played him and then the project fell apart. But when I almost played him, I did all my homework on him and I got to know him. And everything from how he talked to how he always sounded like he was drinking, always sounded like perhaps he was, had just recovered from the flu. And always had that thing about his voice. And of course, being Russian, sounds like Dracula and was very cool. And you know, he was a drug addict. He was an alcoholic. He was bipolar, and he was brilliant. And he was driven by secrets and by passion. He was driven. And what a cool cat to play, dude! I want to play him.
Wow.
I want to play Nureyev.
I'm going to be honest. Listen, I've heard so much about meditation, but I really didn't think it was something that would ever work for me. That is until I found the Calm app. Calm helps you feel more at ease from the moment you start. So find somewhere that's comfortable and familiar to you, like your couch or your bed, and tune into Calm. Calm is the number one mental wellness app, and it gives you the tools that improve the way you feel. You could use Calm for so many different things. You can reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations. You can improve your focus with curated music tracks. And you can rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories. I turn to Calm because, hey, I'm a New Yorker and I have trouble sleeping. What I love about Calm is there's so many different things that they offered for sleep. Stories, sleep soundscapes like rivers and brooks. I also love the music, but Calm can also help you focus, self-improvement, reduce stress. It really is a great app to improve the quality of your life. For listeners of Behind the Velvet Robe, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/velvetrope. Go to calm.com/velvetrope for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/velvetrope.
Is the, what about, you know, you've worked with everyone in the business. Is there someone or a group of people in particular that you would just love to act opposite that you haven't?
I'm really sad that I missed Jack Nicholson. Because I'm told we'll never see Jack in another movie. So I will never get to work with him. And I never did work with him. And I always wanted to, because Jack was my favorite guy. And I just loved him. I loved from Five Easy Pieces on, he owned me, Jack Nicholson.
In terms of endearment, I mean, it's all so good.
Dude, I know that movie. God, that movie.
Wow. And you just, you've heard that he's just, he's done with acting.
Yeah. He's done.
Wow. Yeah, no, he was. What about when someone like, so, you know, when The Wrestler came out, I mean, this was just a quote that stuck out to me. I mean, I don't know if you know this quote, like when The Wrestler came out and Mickey Rourke then says, you know, he had this big resurgence. Now you've been working, you're working nonstop. It's like, you've never said, you know, you like you said, you say yes to a lot of things. Like, and then Mickey Rourke says, you know, I really hope Eric Roberts has a movie like this. It has like this moment and like this resurgence and all these accolades. Like, you know, like, are you aware that then there's this, you know, like he's implying, like, you know, there's the Brad Pitt, there's the George Clooney, you know, implying like, you know, it implies like you got off track in your career. Like, I'm not saying, you know what I mean? Like, are you aware like of that narrative out there? And like, did you hear this quote? And it's not really an insult. He's actually saying what a great actor you are. You know what I'm saying?
I've been aware of that narrative since before I had a career to have a narrative about, because that's always going to be a narrative somewhere about everybody who's famous. It's just a part of the package. And what are you going to do? You know, you just gotta grin and bear it. I don't care. And you know, what do I care? I love Mickey. He's one of the hardest guys to ever work with, I've ever worked with in my life, who I love. And because, you know, he's a bum. He shows up late, he's not prepared. He's like, well, now? And you're like, yeah, come on, man, come on. But you know, but he's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant actor. Oh my God. Did you see Barfly?
I mean,
oh my God. Oh my God, this guy. This actor is one of the greats, one of the all-time greats. And did you ever see Spun?
No.
No, dude, you owe yourself a Mickey Rourke Film Festival.
I kind of do, right?
He's got some performances that are just, they will live forever because they're perfect. And then he's got some, you know, we all make mistakes. You know, what are you going to do? You know, punish him for them? No, he's a great actor. And it's just a shame, you know, what he did to his face, you know, because he used to look like a movie star.
Do you feel that, you know, like you say, there's all these narratives out there, like, how is it now, like with social media? You know, like, that's kind of changed the game, like.
It's changed everything, dude. Yeah, it's weird. My wife knows I'm not to be trusted with that kind of responsibility. And so my wife and our assistants, we have a couple, they do that. They run everything past me. Supposedly I have last word. I don't, but you know, they make me feel like I think I do, you know, but you know, they take care of it for me because my wife said I would ruin it if it was left to me because I'd be honest. She said, you can't do that. And so I don't.
I was going to say, do they think you'll be up at night, like tweeting and telling people really what you feel about them?
It's occurred to them. My wife, when Trump was at his height being an idiot on Twitter, my wife would say, you know, this is kind of how I kind of think you might act, by the way. This is why I don't let you do this. I wouldn't do that. But, you know, she thinks I might. So I don't anything.
It's a whole different world and you can't go. I mean, everything is out there now. And so, you know what I mean? Like,
you ain't kidding.
Do you ever feel like, man, if I came up like during this time, you know, listen, we used to have the National Enquirer. Now it's like out there within seconds.
From your mouth to everybody's ears. That's exactly what happened. It was so just a small little corner of our industry, the Enquirer, those shows, whatever it was, hard copy. Oh my God, you know, but then everybody's business became everybody's business and everybody's business was everybody's business. Oh my God. And suddenly everything was everywhere. And it got frightening. I mean, and everybody also has a camera now, dude. And they have it ready to take a picture. Bad, good, and indifferent. It's going to end up on the internet. And you know, he'll never know if I took his picture. If I take it like this, but if I take it like this, he'll look like Frankenstein, and it'll be on the internet forever. And you're stuck with that kind of world now. It was so much more fun to be famous in 1978 than in 1998. Because in 1978, it was special. In 1998, it's not special. It's just, it's a responsibility, in fact. It's like if you don't, you know, live up to it, it will tear you down.
And you're lucky if it's just a picture. I mean, now people are going to pretend they're texting and it's a whole video. So God forbid you're having a bad day at Starbucks and, you know, your latte's late. That's going to become, you know, Eric Roberts is a bastard, is nasty. And look what he said at Starbucks and it will be all over the place.
Well, it's really true. The meek have finally inherited the earth. All thanks to Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Someone told me, like, you know, you have to just picture it like the internet is just a fake place. It's like, it's kind of true when you think about it like that. It's people that would never say something to your face or,
that's right.
But to say the meek heaven, I like how that I like that.
That's what happened,
dude. I'm going to steal that because I actually like that.
Well, that's what happened. That's what it is. The meek have inherited the earth. They run the show now, dude, because they're all faceless and they all have that opinion and it's all right there. And they're the bosses, dude. They inherited the earth. It belongs to them.
Wow.
We gave it to them. Like we gave everybody we know Big Brother with our phones. We all have Big Brother now.
Yeah.
We all have Big Brother, dude. Every one of us. And we paid for it. It's far out.
And people are addicted to it. So it's not going away anytime soon.
Me too.
Yeah. Same here. Why do you think like society is so obsessed with like celebrity? You know, this one, I mean, this is like, this one's mad at that one. Like, why do you think people, I mean, because you're a human being. I mean, everyone's a person that I've learned that through this job. I mean, you just speak to people like human beings.
It has not changed over time. It's just we're more aware of it and we have more access to it. There were just as many people in their private moment, in their bathroom mirror, giving their acceptance speech for the Academy Award as there are now. It's just we didn't know that. Now we know it's going on. So now it's out there as trash, as opposed to just another human element. We like to make people feel bad for being human, and we're nasty. We've become a high school hallway.
Yeah.
And it really peaked and came into its own. We're all a bunch of backbiting high school juniors who want to be seniors, and we're all obnoxious, and we're all backbiting, and we're all being not trustworthy about our opinions. I mean, and we're just not cool, and it's happened.
I was going to say, and it's like, it is a high school hallway. It's bullying, and it's all really people that are ultimately like, cause like a bully that are insecure inside and just want to make that funny comment through putting you down just to get the accolades. So in a way it's like, right. And that is high school bullying. And if you just, anytime someone comes to me, I'm like, I say, thank you. As soon as you're nice back to them, they're like, oh, wait, like I didn't mean any of that. Like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, you can say it. It's fine. Like, I was bullied in high school. So this has been dealt with a long time ago. So you can say it all day. I'm just going to say thank you. And then it's like, oh my God, I didn't mean it. I'm like, no, you keep going. It's fine. They just want to be acknowledged, right?
Yeah. Everybody wants to be special. Everybody wants to be thought of as special. And so common courtesy is the most important thing really in all human intercourse. Common courtesy. Thank you. You're welcome. Excuse me. Let me hold that for you. Common courtesy. Just easy, non-efforted common courtesy. It's the answer to everything. And if we all did it for everybody, we'd have a happy planet, dude. It'd be cool.
It would be way cool. Well, before we move on to music videos, because I do want to talk about music videos, I just want to say, you know, there's been so much written, you know, and said, you know, to that point over the years about, you know, you and Julia. So I just wanted to ask, like, where are you guys now with things?
Oh, yeah. Julia and I have always been fine. I think years and years ago, I was doing a press tour for some movie. I don't even know what movie it was. And it was just when Pretty Woman just got released. And so they're asking a bunch of questions about Julie. And I said, excuse me, can we talk about me? I think I was very funny. And of course, then it's like, oh, they have a problem. Oh my God, they have a problem. And suddenly all these problems I kept hearing about I have with my sister that I don't have with my sister. And they're just popping up all over the place. And I'm asked about them as if they're real issues. So what happened with so-and-so? We heard a lot. And I'm like, really? I wasn't aware of that. And so, so now they're keeping secrets. So Eric won't talk about it, blah, blah, blah. So, and it blew up and became all these things it wasn't. And we don't agree on a lot of things, my sister and I, but we've always talked, and we've always bitched, and we've always had fun knowing each other. Simple as that.
Well, first of all, who does agree with their sister? I mean, I just told my sister 5 minutes ago to please stop texting me that I'm too busy to speak for the next two days and we'll talk later. So that's...
Don't get me wrong. I love knowing my sister. She's a cool chick, my sister. And she's got these three adolescent children now. I mean, her life is not a day at the beach, dude. And, you know, and she's got a lot of shit she has to deal with. And she's doing a TV series again now. I mean, she's doing a lot of stuff. And, you know, so you know, I don't ignore it. I just stay out of her hair with the press. That's all. Simple. And she stays out of mine.
That's understandable. And, I mean, honestly, if you're doing a movie of your own, which you are doing all the time, and the press just wants to talk about any member of your family, it is kind of a little like, what? It's a little skeezy. Right. I could not imagine having three adolescent children ever, personally.
She does, dude.
Do you love being an uncle, though? I mean, you're an uncle.
Well, I've got it made. I mean, I've got it made. And it's like being a grandparent. My granddaughter, I mean, I'm like Spider-Man. I'm the ultimate guy. And it's just really cool. And it's the same as being an uncle, you know?
You can do no wrong. Before we move on to music videos, though, I just want to ask, like, what type of mom is Julia, like, to these three kids?
Oh, you know what? If I start doing that, I'm going to get myself in trouble no matter what I say.
I do not want to get you in trouble.
Thank you, buddy.
Well, listen, and this has nothing to do with you and her.
She's a great mom, by the way. She's a cool mom. She's a hip mom. She knows it all.
Which, it's not easy to be the cool mom. Listen, I just think that is a media thing of forget about you. Let's not get you in trouble. Just anyone. You look at, there's a million people that have mother, daughter in the business. It's like, it's something about the business when there's family members, especially siblings. I think it gets taken and it again, I can name 100 other people. It gets taken in a strange direction. I do think that.
Yeah, I know. I've been there.
Well, let's talk about, you know, here you are. People think of you as a great movie star. They think of you as a great actor. I don't think a lot of people think Eric Roberts, you know, music video star. So it's funny because I'm friends with Ian Flanagan's manager. So Ian came on my show the other day and his manager was like, by the way, you know, Eric Roberts was just in his video. And I'm like, what, really? And then that sent me down this path. And then I'm like, oh my God. I mean, I know you've been in some movies. Like so how did this all start with The Killers, right? Like, I mean, The Killers are great. How does this call come in? Like, hey, Eric, we're thinking of you for this video.
Eliza? What was the lady director's name of the Killers video, the first one? Sophie Mueller. Sophie Mueller thought of me for the Killers video. Sophie Mueller is a really cool, brilliant director who was doing that video, who asked me if I'd be in it. I said, no, thank you. I'm a movie star. I don't do music videos. So then all my kids go, what is wrong with you, Dad? What are you doing? No, God, call her back. Say you want to be in her video. So I did. I said, so my kids told me I effed up. So can I be in the video? She said, sure, no sweat. So I did the Killers video. It went number one. It went crazy. So then they started calling me for videos. And then every video I did went number one. So I became video platinum. I became the guy. And, if you wanted a real actor in a video, Eric Roberts is always go platinum calling. And I started saying yes to videos if I liked the song. And I would always check with the kids. And they always say, yes, no, okay, that's good. No, do this. And so I was doing what they told me. And all my videos went number one. And I've done, I don't know, close to a dozen of them now.
I mean, and let's not undersell, like Mariah Carey twice.
Yeah, she was cool. Her bodyguards are cool too.
I wow. mean, do you interact with Mariah when you, I mean, you know, other than I imagine?
Yeah, we hung out a little bit. We like hung out. Yeah. And we talked about stuff. And she's very smart. She's very funny. She has a terrible rep for being odd and not very bright and not very in touch. She's cool. None of that's true. She's funny. She's late a lot. Okay. That's the only negative I have to say about her.
She does have that diva, not funny, not smart rep.
And she's not that way at all. She's sweet. She's unpretentious. All the stuff that she should be, she is.
Well, she must be thrilled with you in her video. And it does go to number one.
She had a great time. She had a great time.
What about Rihanna? Bitch better have my money. I mean, I assume your kids say, yes, Dad, run as fast as you can. Do not say no.
There's a funny story about that. So she hired me to play her husband, who she kills in the video. Okay, so I show up. I'm ready to go to work. And there's all this hush-hush talk-to-talk and all this like finger-pointing about Eric Roberts kind of weirdness. What's going on? So she finally goes to my wife and she goes, Mrs. Roberts, I have to put him in another part. She goes, why? Well, because quite frankly, your husband is too fine to kill. I can't kill him. I'd be hated. Look at him. So who's he gonna play? He'll play the cop. Okay. So I play the cop who runs in and out of the video all the time. That's how that came about. I was supposed to play the husband who dies, but I was too fine to kill.
So look, having like an R-rated scene with Kim Basinger, having Rihanna say you're too fine to kill, like this is not a bad life, Eric.
Am I complaining?
No.
No. I do love my life. I love my wife. I love my house. I love our pets. I'm a happy guy.
Do you just love, because you do say yes, like you are working. Listen, a lot of actors, you know, they do a movie here and there, like you work, right? Like, do you like the lazy day like you had where you're catching up on the TiVo, like every night? Do you love working?
I've seen the planet. I've seen the whole thing, all but the Arctics. And I have the best job on the planet as an actor. They dress me. They feed me. They like take me all kinds of cool places. I play all kinds of cool parts I would never play otherwise. I mean, and I see the world for free. And I had this great marriage of 29 years. And I'm a love of my wife every day. And I'm a love of my job every day. And I now currently have my favorite job I've ever had as an actor on a show called Righteous Gemstones. I love that job like I love my wife every day. I love that job. And I can't believe the people I'm working with. John Goodman is so much fun. That guy is so cool. Oh, I love the man. And Danny McBride is an overused and abused word, but the guy is a freaking genius. And I'm so lucky to have that part that I got through auditioning. And Danny saw my audition and gave me the part. So, and it's my favorite part I ever had, ever as an actor, ever had.
I'm just really,
yeah, true story.
What is it about Righteous Gemstones, which is great, but like, what is it about this part that is your favorite?
It's the character. This character, I'm. It's a character. You know, we all have lots of characters in our repertoire.
Yeah.
And this guy is a guy I've always wanted to play, and he's half my oldest first cousin, Adam, and half my grandfather, Roberts. He's those guys together. And those guys were very different. One of them was an asshole and one of them is a saint. And I put them together in this junior character. And he's just a very fucked up, likable, not likable, loathable, lovable cat. And I just love him. I just love him. And I get to have these big scenes with John Goodman, who is such a great guy to go to work with. I'm in heaven, dude.
Were you a Roseanne fan, a Connors fan? Did you watch Roseanne?
Yes. I've never seen Connors, but yes, I was a huge Roseanne fan, and I was a huge also Roseanne fan, a fan of hers. And the stories are great. I'm not going to say one of them, but they're great. And you know, yeah. John Goodman is a saint. I love him.
And where do you know these stories from? From Roseanne, or is it from taking a break while you're working on Righteous Gemstones? And I'm not going to ask you to reveal that. And John is like, hey, let me tell you some secrets from the set of Roseanne.
I don't remember.
It was a great show. It really, and she's so talented.
Oh, it was a fabulous show. Oh my God. And it made her generational rich. I know. Yeah.
Speaking of phenomenal, unbelievable, great shows, like, do you watch or did you watch your daughter in the brilliant American Horror Story? Like,
I love that show. I love that series. Oh yeah, of course I did. And besides, what's the vacation movie she did? What's the vacation movie Emma did, baby? Yeah, We're the Millers. We're the Millers and American Horror Story are my two favorites.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They're not alike, but they are my two favorites.
Ryan Murphy is, and Blow. I mean, Blow was also great, but Ryan Murphy is just brilliant. It's so, well, you know, I could, you come up in these parts, like Ryan Murphy pulls people out of nowhere. Like, would you, I mean, if he called, I could see you in American Horror Story.
I'm standing by.
I could. And that's your favorite, and Vacation with the Millers. They're both great. You love being a grandfather? It's just, it's changed everything.
It's the best job there is, pretty much. I mean, because they go home. It's an awful thing to say, but it's the truth. And it's just great.
What about, you know, you mentioned your wife and she helped coordinate all this, and I love her for that. But, you know, 29 years, I know she's not in the public eye, but you are. It's still, it's Hollywood, 29 years. How does this work? Like, how did we get here? I mean, that's something.
She's in the public eye, dude. She's in the most, the biggest money-making, you know, comedy ever made, Animal House. She plays her, what's your character's name in Animal House? Brunella. Can we dance for your dates? That's my wife.
I didn't know that.
So she's been in all kinds of movies, dude. And in fact, one of her best performances for my money is in a movie called Love is a Gun with my wife, myself, and Kelly Preston. And my wife kind of steals the movie. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go watch that.
Love is a Gun. You'll love it.
So how, you know, 29 years, like, it's, you know, you're clearly in love. Like, how does that, you know, that's, it's hard in Hollywood. It's hard in general, but Hollywood, it's hard.
Well, here's what it is. I've been asked this, so I've honestly given that thought. Because they say, you know, what constitutes a marriage that is a real marriage after a generation and a half of time? I mean, half your life, you've been married to one person. How's that happen? How do you do that? How does it make that work? And I really thought about it, and I have an honest answer for you. It's two things. It's honesty. And I mean, it's honesty down to the bone marrow, honesty, where it's real work, it's real effort, and you have to pay attention, and you have to be kind, and you have to be honest. And it's work, and it's affection. And when I say affection, what I'm talking about is sex, but I mean affection too. But it's sex and honesty. And when you have those two things, you have all you need. And I have it with this woman. And I fucking love my wife. Oh, my wife is my hero. And she's smarter than me. She's nicer than me. And she's funnier than me. And I admire her so much that it makes me a better person.
Wow. And it, when you say it like that, it's so obvious. Like, okay, well, that's easy. But, you know, honesty and sex. Okay, that makes sense to me. But so hard in practice.
Oh, yeah. No, they're both big jobs. And they have to be done well, or you might as well not even attempt them. Simple. And so they're like both responsibilities for your life and for hers. And if you're going to take it on, dude.
What do you say about, you know, and I'm just using him as an example, like a Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, he says Eric Roberts is one of the best actors of our, you know, of any generation. A lot of people that are really, you know, just have been in the business forever are huge, say this about you. Like, when you hear things like that, what do you say?
I say, thank you, dude. Leonardo DiCaprio said that?
Yeah.
Wow, dude, that's really cool, because I'm a fan of his. Ever since Gilbert Grape, I've been a big fan. And he made that part in that movie, that Titanic movie. Had both of them not been that good, that movie would have been a really high action soap opera. But it was good. It was wonderful. You felt for both of them in a great way. And it's because they're both incredible actors. That movie worked on that level because of those two guys, those two actors.
Leo and Kate Winslet.
So I'm very impressed with myself that he would say that. Thank you. Thank you, Leonardo. Thank you, dude.
And finally, like, do you get starstruck, you know, like when you're walking around LA, you run into someone, you work with someone? I mean, you have more IMDb credits than like 100 actors combined. Like, do you get starstruck either on a set or just by living your life or going to a red carpet? Does that happen anymore to you?
Of course I do. In fact, my like biggest, you know, starstruck anything, because I love this movie called The Killing. Who did 2001 in a Space Odyssey? Who is that director? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know.
It was the last Kubrick. It was the last film he wrote. He did not direct. It was called The Killing, and it stars Sterling Hayden. And my first grandfather in my first movie was played by Sterling Hayden. And I had already been shooting for 3 weeks when it was his first night, and it was a night shoot. His first day was a night shoot, and I got to meet him. And I was in awe because of The Killing, of that movie, The Killing. Oh my God, that's the guy from The Killing. Oh my God, that's him. I went into his trailer and he was smoking hash out of a pipe. And he said, "Did I get high when I worked?" And I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Oh, well, I do. So anyway, what's this scene about tonight?" I said, "I know." He said, what scene are we shooting tonight?" I said, "Scene 87. I know the number. What's the scene?" So I told him. And then he said to me, "Are you good at improvisation?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." He said, "Good, because that's what we're doing." I was scared to death. But he was fantastic. Fantastic. And we stayed on track with the scene in the improvisation. And it's an incredible scene because he was an incredible talent. I was in awe. Yes. So to answer your question, yes, I'm in awe when there's a reason to be. Sure.
Wow. Is there anything else I didn't bring up that you want to talk about here today? I like to give people a chance at the end. You know, thank you for answering all my questions. You know, I feel like you've had an iconic career, but I like to give people a chance to bring up whatever they want at the end.
Okay. I would just like to say that a career in show business is the luckiest, most fortuitous thing you can possibly have. Because it is so personal and it can get so ugly if it goes wrong. But if it doesn't go wrong and they allow you to work into your old age like me, it's the most incredible thing in the world. And what I have backing that up is I have a marriage of forever. And so I have my cake and eat it too. And I really feel that way. And I'm not a gee golly whiz kiddo. Thank you. But thank you. I love my life, and I think I've earned it. But I'm also not entitled, and I'm very lucky. And I know a lot of guys are just as good an actor as I am, and they don't get to work like I do. So I am so happy every day. And I was so freaked out when they took film. Oh my God, they took film. What's going to happen now? And then, you know, suddenly I realized I was more famous than I thought I was. It was great fun.
You are more famous. Yes. Now you've made me think of one more question before we go. What would you advise someone? You know, like, look, there are so many actors that are starting out, you know, that maybe aren't working as much as you, that are just, you know, like, what would you advise someone that just is having a hard time with it? And, you know, look, it's a tough business. It's a tough business.
It would be about interaction and about human behavior. And it's this. My advice to anybody just starting in this industry is treat everybody you meet like they're going to be your boss next week, because they might be. It's how this works.
That is good advice. That is how this business works, right?
Yeah.
It's all about, yeah, the person that is... Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Well, listen, I will share your social media with everyone. Like, I really appreciate you taking an hour out. I appreciate your wife helping to coordinate this. Thank you for entertaining all of my questions and my trip down memory lane with you. And like, you know, I really appreciate your time.
You are so kind. And thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. And have a great day.
You too. Peace out.
Take care, Eric. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review.
because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind The Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind The Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.